Economist.
From The Economist in London, this is Money Talks, a weekly conversation around themes in the worlds of business, finance, and economics. I'm Stan Pignell, the banking editor. And for the last show of 2015, we want to look forward to next year. Some of you may have seen our annual publication, The World in 2016, as it's called this year, in which economist writers gaze into their proprietary crystal ball. We're not going to delight you with our predictions for the S&P 500 or the dollar-euro exchange rate. Instead, I've asked two of our correspondents, Matthew Valencia, one of our business writers, and Dan Rosenheck, our data editor, to talk about where next year's juiciest scandals are likely to come from. 2015 was a vintage year for skullduggery, from Volkswagen to FIFA, doping in athletics, and always, always more skeletons coming out of finance's closet. Right, Matthew, let's start with you. The odds of us being right on any of this are pretty low, but you have speculated in The World in 2016 on practices in the art market that you think could blow up next year.
Yes, well, making predictions is always foolish, particularly so when it comes to corporate and financial scandals. But I've identified a few that I think could be the source of problems over the next year or so. The art market being one of them, because it's a market that probably more than any other now still has Wild West type sort of characteristics. There's a distinct lack of regulation, even in the more policed bit of it. In auctions, there has been a sort of a tightening up, but there's still a lot of stuff that goes on. A lot of it sort of goes unreported. For instance, chandelier bidding, in which the auction house itself raises the price by pretending that bids are going on when they aren't. A bigger problem probably is straw bidding, where, for instance, you have collectors who don't want the price of works of artists they collect to go beneath a certain level, so they will send people in to bid up but without any real intention of buying.
And you're saying this is the police bit? So where's the worst stuff going on?
Yeah, so that's the bit where there's more oversight. The really murky bit of the market is the private sales market, where you have millionaires and billionaires who are sort of buying and selling works of art. I'm not necessarily advocating that the regulators sort of flock into this area, but you are going to see a lot of trouble here. You're already seeing various cases, various scandals. There's going to be a lot of scrutiny of the role of middlemen in the private sales market. The middlemen have been found to be taking a much bigger cut than they were supposed to be. In one case, a billionaire discovered issues with this just by having a chance conversation with somebody who knew the person who bought one of the works that he was selling. I think that's going to blow up, or it's certainly going to be sort of read about and reported on more over the coming year or two.
Dan Rosenheck, who are you going to massively offend by suggesting that their business is crooked?
Okay, well, I'll pick up on Matthew's theme with the art market as far as opaque, unregulated asset classes, and suggest a topic dear to my heart, which is fine wine. Over the past, 15 years, there have been two major wine forgery scandals in which skilled counterfeiters duped every critic, every taster, and collectors worth, investing millions of dollars in these liquid assets. Hardy Rodenstock pulled off most of his scam in Europe, and Rudy Kernyawan did in the U.S. However, within wine circles, it is widely considered that the real rampant, unregulated frontier of this world is in Asia, particularly the auction market centered in Hong Kong. You hear anecdotal reports of just even retail stores there that have shelves and shelves of rare bottles of Burgundy going back to the first half of the 20th century in pristine condition. And I certainly think, particularly as economic conditions in that part of the world turn south, that the time is ripe for the lid to be blown off one of these counterfeit forging examples over there.
And I think, one of the things that ties these assets we're talking about together is that, these are generally bought by very wealthy people who may not have a particularly good handle on what it is they're buying. They're trophy assets. They may not understand it as well as they should. They often buy with emotion.
Yeah, another thing that ties them together is these millionaires and billionaires aren't necessarily going to fess up if they've been conned. I mean, it's pretty embarrassing if you find out that you've paid $20,000 for a bottle of wine that's worth $200. You might just, not fess up, drink it, and nobody's any the wiser. Dan, one interesting thing you alluded to is a lot of this stuff happens when economic conditions are strained. It seems likely we would see some more conventional types of scandals, certainly if there's a downturn of any sort.
Absolutely. Certainly the recent history of the biggest finance and accounting scandals in the world has been closely tied to recessions, either looming or underway, with Enron and Bernie Madoff being the two sort of canonical examples. So I think if you want to look for where the next, at least, accounting scandal is likely to pop up, you should look at places where asset prices have been declining. So that would be emerging markets more broadly, could be Brazil, could be China. Any of these places that have had a lot of trouble. And in particular, I would again look at Asia because the accounting practices there are certainly decades behind where they need to be. And there's you know, exponentially more money coursing through these companies in these markets. And the watchdogs haven't nearly been expanding their efforts or professionalism at a sufficient pace to keep up with that.
And if I can come in on China there, I mean, there have been oodles of accounting scandals of Chinese companies. Short sellers have been very much focused on the Chinese, looking at potential problems there. Dozens of Chinese firms have been deregistered from the US market. Hundreds, indeed. And now we have a slowdown in China. So I think, you know, one thing we may see is the accounting problems, the accounting issues, the temptation to cook the books, spreading from some of these more peripheral companies, perhaps, to larger, more legitimate companies who are sort of essentially trying to keep their heads above water as the economy slows down.
As somebody who likes a good juicy scandal, I'm just a little bit annoyed at these short-selling hedge funds that you were alluding to. So these are hedge funds who think they find something wrong in a company, typically a pretty small company, and then short-sell the shares. So basically benefit if the prices of the shares falls, then they go public, the price tanks, and they make
that was
a ton
what happened
money.
With Enron.
Yeah, but so the Chinese ones are happening, and it's always like $100 million here, $200 million here, and they just seem to be intervening very early, and you kind of wish that they'd leave those companies alone until there'd be like a much, much bigger scandal. This is like the journalist's lament, I guess. It wouldn't be so good for my pension fund. Matthew, another business you wrote about in your World in 2016 piece is the murky world of legal services.
Yes, that's right. You know, maybe this is wishful thinking on my part, but the billing that law firms do, the billable hour system, which essentially involves law firms putting pressure on their associates, their lawyers to bill a certain number of hours per year. You know, this is a system that has come in for a lot of criticism over the years. It's still there. It's quite deeply entrenched. You know, there has been a sort of backlash to a certain extent. Some firms have sued over this. There is an invoice auditing cottage industry that looks increasingly at what law firms are doing. And I'm not sure whether it's going to be a source of great scandal, but I think it's certainly something that's going to get more attention.
Unless it's one of those ongoing scandals that never blows up into a single moment of crisis because it's just a scandal every day.
Yes, well, that's quite possible. It has been going on a long time, so it's possible that it just rumbles on and, you know, you never reach a point where something truly scandalous happens or there's a court case where it really sort of blows out into the open. I would say that there's another legal issue which is really going to sort of bubble up, and that's the role of lawyers as enablers for tax evasion, tax avoidance, money laundering, financial crime, all of these things which have received a lot more attention since the financial crisis. Obviously, there's been a lot of focus on the parties that are doing this, but, you know, they need help. They need facilitators, enablers, and law firms are key in that, in setting up offshore structures, shell companies, trusts, complex structures that allow people to do various dodgy things with money. And in the US, the UK, and a number of other countries, we're seeing regulators and governments starting to focus a lot more on this. I think if, as seems quite possible, there's a big scandal involving a law firm in this area, that would really sort of galvanize change.
I actually just have a question about that as somebody who used to cover the legal industry for The Economist. Are the firms that are paving the way for these types of financial transactions / crimes to occur, are these sort of specialist boutiques that work on offshore or trusts and estates or that kind of thing? Or are they the big name billion-dollar firms that have diversified practices? And if so, if they get in hot water in an area like this, is it the kind of thing that could take down a broader firm?
I think not. I mean, it seems not to be the Clifford Chances of the world and the Freshfields of the world. It's going to be smaller outfits, but some of them are rather large. In Panama, for instance, you have a number of large law firms which deeply involved in offshore incorporation. I mean, they're essentially sort of incorporation factories for offshore companies and trusts. They've received a lot of attention over the past year or two. I think there's going to be more in other offshore centres as well. So we're not talking about minnows here, but we're not talking about the giants of the industry either.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, accountants used to be in a similar position, and they used to do very complicated tax structuring for some of their clients. And they went from being seen as mere facilitators of other people's wrongdoing to actually the wrongdoers and themselves landing in hot water. Right. The only sector which is more likely to generate scandal than finance is sports. Dan, you are the Economist sports writer. We've had doping this year. We've had FIFA. You think 2016 might be the year of match fixing?
I was quite distressed, even personally, to see that in November, Singapore released Don Tan, who is accused, at least, of running the world's largest match-fixing organization in football and a number of other sports. When he was arrested, it was widely seen as a sort of a first stab at what prominent critics like the journalist E. Glenn Hill say is endemic, surely in Asian leagues, but increasingly in international competitions as well, lower levels of European competitions and creeping up the table. That's a big warning flag, and it would not surprise me at all if next year we find that really, sort of for the first time in recent memory, that a marquee Western sporting event could be the Olympics, could be something that draws, you know, millions of Western eyeballs is not on the up and up.
I'm going to make a prediction of my own here, and I've been making it for a number of years, but doping in football strikes me as being overdue and erring. All the incentives are there. The players have an incentive to dope. They play more matches. They run further and faster.
And the safeguards aren't there.
And the safeguards are absolutely not there, and you kind of see it bubbling away. Everybody's got an incentive to sweep it under the carpet, and at some point the whole thing's going to blow off. I'm going to close off with another prediction, which is I will not be presenting Money Talks next year. I've been ejected from head office and bound for Mumbai to cover Indian business and finance. So tune in next week to get a flavor of the new regime. You can find Matthew's piece on scandals in the world in 2016, along with many other projections for the year to come. And as always, you can find the latest news on finance, economics, and business at economist.com. In London, this is The Economist.
The Economist. We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. The twigs and leaves in your yard aren't exactly comfortable, and while mud does perfectly contour the feet, it doesn't score high on the durability front. But thanks to Allbirds, you can skip all the backyard experimentation. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff like research and testing to create shoes from natural, sustainable materials. And their innovative processes mean using less of the bad stuff and more of the good, while making shoes unlike any other. Like the Plant Pacer, made with 100% plastic-free plant leather. The Tree Dasher, a running shoe made from eucalyptus tree fiber. And from sugarcane, they've made the Superlight, their lightest shoe ever by weight and carbon footprint. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're supernatural. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com today. That's Allbirds.com.